Hello, welcome to the Sex Ann podcast, the podcast that talks about how we work through our health challenges to fulfilling take two. Hello, god damn it, take three. Hello, welcome to the Sex Ann podcast, the podcast that talks about how we work through our health challenges to have fulfilling
successful. What are you looking for there?
Sexual. Looking for sexual. Take four. Hello, welcome to the Sex Ann podcast, the podcast.
Why are you having such a hard time?
Because now you're watching me.
You asked me to watch you.
Hello.
Hello. And welcome to the Sex Ann podcast. Take six. One, two.
Hello, welcome to the Sex Ann podcast, the podcast that talks about how we work through our health challenges to have fulfilling sexual relationships with ourselves and others. I am Megan Narvaez, a licensed mental health counselor in the state of Washington, and this is episode 22. Content warning. As we are talking about mental health and sharing stories often rooted in trauma, some parts of this episode may be difficult to listen to. Please take care of yourself and take a break from the episode if you need to. So the topic of today's podcast episode is navigating triggers during sex and how to communicate more effectively with what your needs are with your partner that you're having sex with. A lot of clients recently have brought up having difficulties communicating needs during sex. And I want to emphasize that it's important to communicate, not just to improve sexual pleasure, but to also keep yourself safe. There's a lot of things that can and should ideally be communicated in a comfortable, sexually intimate relationship. Although I recognize sometimes it's hard to do, I struggle with this still, even in my own sexual experiences. So when I say communicate what? You know, you have the typical, like, communicate what your interests are in sex. Like, what kind of things do you like to do? What kind of things turn you on? Yeah, absolutely that. But it's also important to communicate when you're experiencing pain, when you are being re-traumatized, or even when you are dissociating. And these last two things come from a feeling of being violated or feeling powerless. And that's not to say that the person you're having sex with is a danger to you. A lot of times when we are experiencing trauma triggers during sex, it could be after the trauma has already occurred. So let's say, I'll give you a scenario here. Actually use the example that Friday Elliott talks about in her episode, which is episode number 16. Friday talks about not liking when someone grabs her neck. And that comes from a history of her own trauma, which she talks about in her episode 16. And even now that she is in a loving relationship, there might be times that still becomes a trigger. And that's because when you experience trauma, that gets stored in our body. And it can flood us and take us back to the trauma when someone touches us, or if we smell something that reminds us of that past trauma. Let's say someone had bad experiences with a partner who drank a lot, and the smell of alcohol on the breath of whoever is the person they're having sex with is then a trigger, even after they've broken up, even after they're in a healthier place. Even after their partner who was abusing alcohol is now sober, but maybe, I don't know, let's say they're in a polyamorous relationship and someone else that they're having sex with has alcohol smells on the breath, and that can still bring you back to a place that you feel like you are in danger, even if it is actually a safe environment for you. So here's a scenario to kind of set the tone for the conversation and to describe a little bit more like what I mean about different emotional and physical sensations that could come up during sex that's important to communicate if it's a trigger or if you're experiencing any discomfort with. And I do want to say I use they. I am specifically using they as a gender-neutral term so that this can apply to any kind of person or relationship dynamic. So here's the scenario. Imagine you're having sex and your partner is caressing your inner thigh and moving to stroke your genitals. You grab their face to bring them in for a kiss. You're now kissing their neck. You throw your head back into the pillow, feeling all kinds of pleasure as they keep caressing and kissing you. And now you're looking at each other with hunger in your eyes. Your partner smirks and grabs your neck with their hands. Then boom, you're being taken back to when your ex grabbed your neck with anger and resentment in their eyes. That person meant to hurt you. This person has good intentions and only meant to just get a little kinky and make it fun. The fun kind of aggressive, not the dangerous kind. They don't know they would be transporting you to a dark place, but there you are, as if it was happening all over again, as if you're being choked by your ex all over again. You start to panic, but your body responds by not moving, not reacting, not speaking. You're frozen. Now you're dissociating. You're leaving your body because you're feeling unsafe. And going back to being re-traumatized, when we experience an intense surge in our body of this like trauma trigger and our bodies are flooded by these emotions of anxiety and fear, powerlessness, we can dissociate. And for those who don't know what dissociating means, dissociating is when you start to, in a way, leave your body. And this is actually an amazing thing that our bodies and our minds can do for us, is dissociate when we are experiencing trauma, experiencing something absolutely terrifying, and especially if it's a type of trauma that recurs, like domestic violence, sexual abuse. We, and by we, I mean our minds will say, this is absolutely a no-no. This is not safe. Our bodies can't change our situation, but our brains will say, like, we need to get out of here. And we are going to do that. We are going to just like pick up and leave. We are going to leave our bodies. And so that's what dissociating is. It's leaving your body during a traumatic event or when you are re-experiencing trauma, even in a safe place. To protect you, to protect your mind, we have to just get you out of here. And you, when that feeling becomes too much, it's like our brain's hitting the eject button and saying like, so during sex, how do you do that? How do you communicate your needs and your desires, your hurts to somebody? And this is more in the context in a sexual relationship that you are comfortable communicating in. So people who are looking for hookups or just a quick fuck, and you have no intention of communicating very much at all, just going in there and winging it, that comes with its own challenges. And I still encourage you to communicate during sex, but this is more specifically if you are in a long-term relationship where there is space and time to communicate and to get to know each other's bodies deeper and to express and process sex afterwards. This is more in around what I want to focus on today. So how do you communicate your needs and desires? First, I encourage what's called the will, want, won't list. And I learned this from Dr. Lindsay Doe on YouTube, Sexplanations. I absolutely love Lindsay Doe. I don't know if she specifically created the will, want, won't list. I've seen different versions of it in many different sexuality, sexologist spaces. But I will plug Lindsay Doe because that is where I first heard of it. And basically, you make a list of three columns, and each column is labeled. The first one is will, the second column is want, and the third column is won't. And in this list, you write down everything that you, for example, will and are willing to do during sex. Like, I am willing to give a blowjob. I'm willing to finger you. I'm willing to kiss you on the neck and the lips. I will lick your butthole. Absolutely. And I want, this is like what you want from the other person. I want you to stroke my breasts. I want you to pull my hair. I want you to spank me. So you write down all the different things that you want in the sexual encounter or want throughout your sexual encounters with this person. And to go back and say that things you haven't done and might want to try would also go in the want list. And the last column is won't. Things you absolutely will not do. I won't let you come on me. I won't finger your butthole. I won't strangle you. And I won't let you strangle me. And in that list, just think of all the things that either turn you off or are triggers for you, things you're not interested in trying. So that is the first way that you can communicate with a partner, like what your needs and desires and your limits are. And it's a very fun way to do that. You just spend a few minutes like scribbling down whatever you can think of and then exchanging lists, seeing what you have in common, seeing what's different. Maybe even going over a list online that can give you maybe more comprehensive things that is hard to think up off the top of your head, or even give you ideas of things you've never tried before. Which, plug, I actually have a will, want, won't list created on my website. You can look at megannarvaez.com/resources for you to find that free resource list. So you can create your own will, want, won't list. The next helpful way to communicate before having sex is talking about your turn-ons and turn-offs. This is another similar thing to the will, want, won't list, but maybe more just a quick conversation. This is more of a quick conversation that you can have. Just saying things that you're interested in doing and things that you're not interested in doing, things that you don't enjoy. Like, it's a turn on for me when you are kissing me and I can smell and taste that you've brushed your teeth. On the opposite of that, it's a turn off for me when we're making out and I can smell that you haven't brushed your teeth since last night. It's a turn on for me when you kiss my neck. But it's a turn off for me when you smack my ass. It's also important to talk about body injuries. It's important to share any body injuries that need to be paid attention to during sex. If you have a bad knee, if you have a bad hip, if you have nerve damage, all these things ideally can and should be communicated before having sex, so that your partners can anticipate and you both or you all can plan around those things. So if I have an injured knee, maybe using some pillows to elevate and to be mindful of how you position your body on top of my leg so that you're not putting too much pressure on my knees. If I have carpal tunnel, maybe I don't necessarily want to feel pressure to finger. And so I just want you to know that my hand, it's a little difficult to move my wrists around, and I don't want you to feel bad about why I am not fingering you. I also want to note and highlight in the kink community, this is kind of the amazing reason why I like kink. And the idea of BDSM communication and consent is because in many BDSM spaces, if it's a good one, because I do want to recognize not everyone holds these standards and not every space emphasizes this, but that just means that you should not be in that space to play or engage in BDSM or kink. But in well-made, created BDSM spaces, they will make sure and always encourage and highlight and enforce the idea of risk-aware consensual kink, also known as RAC, and safe, sane, and consensual, SSC. These are kind of like guidelines and acronyms for how to engage in kink and BDSM type behaviors and sexual fun. So we'll go back to RAC. Risk-aware consensual kink basically means that before you engage in anything that you've never done before or can have an extra added layer of risk or danger, which, you know, may not be life-threatening with the intent of having fun and kind of testing out your boundaries and limits, but it could hurt or it could cause damage. It could be a psychological danger if you are not careful and if you're not communicating well. So it's the important part of acknowledging and knowing what the risks are before you engage in any kind of sexual activities and to communicate how to navigate them and do them safely, to make sure you have all of the materials you need or the equipment, make sure you have the right kind of setup to make sure it's an amazing experience that isn't going to hurt either physically or psychologically. And then similar to that is safe, sane, consensual. Safe, sane, and consensual means that you are engaging in behaviors safely and you are engaging in behaviors sanely, which means no substances, not to be on alcohol or maybe even marijuana, to make sure you are able to think clearly and not be inhibited by any kind of substances. And the C part, the consensual part, is the most important part of all of this, is to make sure you have clear consent about what is happening and the sexual acts that you're about to engage in. And so that means checking in with your partner, saying like, is this okay, before you do anything. Hey again, just wanted to drop some quick info for you. The Sex and Podcast has a Patreon. Click the link in the show notes to head on over to the Patreon page and take a look at the different membership options. One exciting thing I'm offering to exclusive members are handmade pottery gifts made especially for Sex and members by my boo, the owner of Mark Moeller Pottery. So if you want to drink some coffee or tea while listening to the show, check out the Patreon. Okay, back to the episode. Now, if you're having sex with your partner, and you notice something uncomfortable is happening in your body, it's important to say something. In a safe sexual encounter that is consensual, and it is still important to take responsibility and be clear about what your needs are, what is uncomfortable, and what your limits are, or what feels not okay. So let's say you are engaging in penetrative sex and it's starting to feel uncomfortable. You're starting to experience pain. Ideally, you wouldn't continue and bear that pain. You would try to communicate the best way you can that something painful is happening. And there can be a lot of guilt and shame about communicating these things. Maybe you feel like in order to be a good partner, you have to just kind of bear through it. Or maybe you come from an idea or a premise that sex is painful, and maybe you've just been taught that that's just how it's supposed to be. And so because you think that being in uncomfortable pain during sex is the norm, that it's not worth saying anything. But to experience pleasure and be able to be mindful and wholeheartedly engaged in sex and enjoy it, it's important to communicate those things. And so another amazing thing that the kink community has as a way to communicate is using safe words. In one safe word system, there is green, yellow, and red safe words. And okay, so before I talk about what green, yellow, and red means, I want to go back and say The reason why the kink community has safe words is because sometimes when you're engaged in sex, whether it's pleasure or pain, or you are just like so present in the sensation, you're like experiencing an out-of-body experience in a wonderful way. Not in a dissociation scary way, but you are just so flooded by endorphins and adrenaline and dopamine. It can be hard to have coherent words, say coherent things, form sentences. And it might be either too much or too difficult to stop and explain something in detail about what's going on in your body. So instead, you can say a very simple one-word response to your experience that doesn't put a lot of effort and energy and brain power into coherently saying something that can communicate your worries or your experiences. So green, think of like a stoplight. You have green, yellow, and red. Green means go. Everything is great. You're experiencing it. You love it. You want more of it. Yellow is, hey, either I'm starting to feel uncomfortable, slow down, check in with me, but there's something up and I'm about to reach my limit for how much I can handle, whether that's emotional, physical, maybe now you're starting to feel a slight throb in that knee that we were talking about earlier before, and you don't want to end the sexual interaction because of your knee. It's not that bad, but you just want to say like, hey, yellow, meaning let's slow down for a moment and check in real quick about what's going on and make whatever adjustments I need. And then there is red. Same as a stoplight. Red is stop. Do not proceed. I have reached my limit. We're done. And this doesn't mean that you have to be done with sex, that like whoever is involved has to throw themselves off of you, or that you have to throw yourself off of that person who's saying red. It just means just stop what you're doing. If you're engaging in kink play, stop the spanking, stop the wax play, stop the electro play. If you're engaging in penetrative sex, end the penetrative sex and just like take a moment to breathe and give the person who said red the chance to either bring themselves down if they're escalated because they're being triggered or traumatized, or to give them time to assess like what kind of pain they're experiencing that is too much or uncomfortable. Or if they don't want to do, let's say you're doing anal sex and anal sex is becoming too painful. Maybe there's not enough lube anymore. You reapply the lube and then you check in and the person says, okay, we're good. I've got more lube. I feel more comfortable. We can keep going. So I say this to say that red does not mean stop everything altogether and that now sex is ruined, this moment is ruined, and we can't enjoy ourselves anymore and this wasn't enjoyable in the first place. It just means pause, take a moment, and reassess what you need to do next with your partner in a loving, caring, considerate, passionate way. Nikki Carr in episode 8 of the Sex Hand podcast actually talks about safe words. And for her, creating a safe word is part of the fun of engaging in fun sexual encounters. And so not only is there the green, yellow, red system, but you can just have a safe word, a random word that has no context to what's going on to say would basically be the equivalent of red. Let's say the safe word is pineapple, which actually, or... So I've heard on pineapplesupport.com, which is a reduced rate service for people in the adult industry to receive therapy that I am a therapist on. Pineapple is one of the most common safe words out there. So let's say I'm engaging in sex and for whatever reason, I've reached my limit and I say pineapple. That means stop. There's a fun one on for those who used to watch Family Guy or still watch Family Guy. Peter and Lois have a funny scene where their safe word is banana. And Lois is getting her like dominatrix outfit on and Peter is getting his like submissive latex outfit on and he's got like his the face mask that goes over his head and they're just getting ready. And Lois quickly checks in and says the safety word is banana, just reminding Peter of what he needs to say if he wants their hilariously, wonderfully kinky sexcapades to stop for a moment. There's also another reason why you can use a safe word to communicate things that are not comfortable for you. And Roberta Garcia, in her episode, episode 7, talks about how her and her wife used a safe word to express any medical issues that were coming up for her wife, who at the time, if I remember correctly from episode 7, Roberta was saying her wife was experiencing skin tearing during a time when she was really sick. And so if they were engaging in impact play or some kind of sexual fun that risked her tearing, then she would say T. And I don't know if T meant time out or T meant something else, but either way, Roberta and her wife would use the safe word T as like a fourth safe word. So let's say they're using green, yellow, red. The fourth one would be T for a medical issue, to just give it more context of what's going on. So you can also use safe words in that way too. If for whatever reason it's hard to even say words, either you're in a position where you can't talk, maybe your mouth is gagged or your voice is a little bit more muffled, or you were so deep in your subconscious, either from flowing and experiencing the high from having mind-blowing sex, mind-blowing kink, or because you are dissociating. Whatever the reason, if it is hard to communicate, you can also use hand gestures. So imagine, and let's going back to T as a safe word, maybe you can do the universal, or at least I think it's universal, maybe just in America, the symbol for T for timeout, where you use your hands and cross them to say stop. Big T, capital T, timeout. And this requires your ability to use your hands, which for other reasons might not be available to you. But for those who can use their hands and have a history of not being able to verbalize while they're dissociating or having sex in whatever capacity, maybe try hand gestures. Or maybe a very immediate tapping on the partner that you're having sex with, almost like Morse code on their skin of just saying, hey, stop, I need you to pay attention to me for a second, something is wrong, or I need you to slow down. You can also communicate that using your hands on their body. So I hope that what I've explained so far about how to communicate during sex is helpful for anyone who's experienced this before. There might be other things out there that I haven't discussed here on the episode. And if you have other ideas, please send me information. I would love to hear and share with other people and just to build on my understanding of ways to help with this. And if you are on Anchor or on Spotify, there is a way to actually leave me a message because Anchor is able to record messages and send them to me. So if you want to contact me directly, you can either send me a voice message through Anchor, or you can send me an email to give me more tips to share with others for this theme going on. I also want to add that the ability to speak up has a lot to do with being assertive. And assertiveness is the ability to make requests even when feeling vulnerable and setting boundaries. So in everyday life, being assertive can be maybe with family members, let's say, of setting the boundary and being assertive, telling them that, hey, you commenting on my body is off limits. I would really appreciate if you don't. And if you have the inkling or the want to say something about my weight, please don't. Just don't do it. That's really important to me. That's an example of being assertive. Another example of being assertive is the ability to say no. Maybe we're so used to saying yes to people because it's an expectation that people place on us or that we place on ourselves to be helpful, to be kind, to be respectful, to show that they care, but it comes at the expense of you. Being able to say, no, actually, I can't do that right now, or no, actually, I won't help you in this capacity is another way of being assertive. Assertiveness also applies to sex as well. being able to clearly state your wants and your boundaries, that's a form of being assertive. And a lot of us weren't raised or had the experiences growing up to do that. We weren't taught that sex is for us if we are in either cis female bodies or in trans bodies, or just learn through society and family and ex relationships that pleasure and sex is not for us or for you. And so we might not have learned that we can and ideally should communicate what's important to us to keep ourselves safe and to keep sex enjoyable. And this is not to say that in order to be assertive and clear, the sex has to be all about you. Assertiveness without compassion and without consideration for others can turn into selfishness. And so it's not about being selfish in sex and doing things that are pleasurable for you, but not as pleasurable for other people, or not letting the other person experience joy and enjoyment too. But it is about being able to state things that are important to you and set those boundaries. And if it is difficult to be assertive and set boundaries in a sexual relationship or otherwise, even just romantic relationship, if you're not having sex, but you are in a relationship that is important to you, romantically or platonically, you know, in any kind of relationship, if it is difficult to be assertive and set those boundaries, then maybe a place that you can go for that is to talk to a therapist or a sex coach, sexologist, to really understand the roots for why. Because that can come from family stuff, that can come from trauma, that can come from our past relationships. There's a lot of places where that is rooted, but it can take a lot of time and work and awareness to understand where that's rooted so that we can unpack that, shake that out, and start to change it. So again, at this point, if you're thinking about it and recognizing that it's hard to express these issues with your partner or to acknowledge it for yourself, to keep sex safe, to keep yourself experiencing pleasure, definitely look into seeing a therapist or some sort of other mental health professional or sexual health professional to talk about it. And after having sex, it's important to debrief. It's not always necessary to debrief right away. You don't have to just like finish sex after all the panting and the orgasmic sensations rolling through your body to be like, hey, how was it? What'd you think? What could have been better? What was great? Like, it doesn't have to be right away. It is important to check in a few hours after sex, like whatever that looks like for you. Just check in and see like how things are going, what kind of sensations brought you pleasure, what kind of sensations wasn't that great, what kind of positions felt better than others. And especially and definitely, if you experience any kinds of like trauma or physical sensations in your body that brought up emotion for you, to debrief about that too, especially if you feel safe with that partner to do so. And this also isn't about, debriefing doesn't have to look like, oh, on a scale of 1 to 10, how was sex? I don't think that kind of debriefing is helpful, because that is a subjective experience, one, and also it's not very clear, like about, so maybe out of 1 to 10, 10 being amazing, 1 being absolutely fucking terrible, you say 3. It's like, what does 3 mean for you? What made it a 3? What, like, help to break it down so the person can better understand what felt good so they can do it next time and what to avoid so that it doesn't happen next time. So even then, definitely be as clear as you can and make it a fun conversation. It doesn't have to be awkward. It doesn't have to be tense. It doesn't have to be like getting a grade back from your school teacher, unless it's part of your kink, of course, and that's something that's fun for you. It is important to have that discussion. Well, I hope that you enjoyed this week's episode of Sex Hand, episode 22. Again, if you have any comments or questions, please message me. If you're interested in being on the show, please, please, please message me, because I would absolutely love to have you. And thank you so much for listening. Be sure to subscribe to the Sex And Podcast to get weekly updates on the latest episodes. Also, I would love it if you left a review on whatever platform you're listening on. Tell me and others what you love about the show and even what could be better. All feedback is welcome, because it'll help make the show the shits. Thank you so much for tuning in. Until next time.